Hey everybody, welcome back to the Underrated Podcast. This is a podcast where we discuss films that are underrated, unappreciated, or ones that have slipped under the radar and passed most people by. We are the Undercast Company, and made up of the three of us, your co-hosts, Alan Torres.
Hey, what's up everybody, how's it going?
Ariel Ortiz.
Hello.
And myself, Derek McDuff. These last couple weeks we have been delving into some older films as part of our mini-series called Vintage Collection. Each of us have picked a film from before 1970 that we wanted to discuss, one that might be forgotten or just kind of slipped under the radar, a cult classic, and one of my favorite films from this time period that maybe must be a little popular time, but people don't remember it so much these days, is the film Zulu, which is what we're going to be talking about today, which is a 1964 historical epic film depicting a battle between the Zulu kingdom and the British army. This was my pick, but before I go too much into it, I wanted to hear what Ariel and Alan thought of it.
Yeah, it's a very epic movie. I first watched this movie in my freshman year of high school, actually, in world history. We were shown it. It's always been a very interesting thing. By that time, like, I knew Michael Caine, first introduced with Muppet Christmas Carol, as of course. And then, but by the time I watched the movie itself, he was already Alfred in the great Dark Knight trilogy. So it's a very interesting thing to see him in one of his very, very early roles.
Introducing Michael Caine, the opening credits say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And he's like third tier listed as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. For that reason. And so, yeah, it is a very cool thing to see him in this role. It's always been such an epic movie. You know, the contents of the war, very much akin to, like, you could say the Middle Eastern wars, like, where not really a war that should have happened. Also, mm-hmm. Vietnam, not really a war that should have happened, but, you know, had these like battles to them. And this one very much akin to the Battle of the Alamo in U.S. history of like underdog kind of regime. Of soldiers kind of going against like an epic amount of foes and just kind of making it out by just their wits and their strategy. And kind of like in this movie, kind of it's depicted that the Zulu Warriors kind of like stop fighting them because they kind of like recognize that one, they're dwindled very low, but so they're not really a threat anymore, but two, also kind of like out of respect. Yeah, so, like, with the Michael Caine character, kind of, like, starting off as an arrogant kind of man, soldier, thinks he's the best in a way, but then also kind of becoming humbled and caring for his men in the end. And definitely, like I said, like, awesome, epic fights of just, like, the cinematography in itself. Really incredible. Kind of get that sense of, like, as, you know, kind of a epic as like the Lord of the Rings kind of like at Helm's Deep mm-hmm. feel of a battle. But yeah, so for me, I still enjoyed it now, since, you know, last time I watched it, I think going on 12 years now, so yeah.
It definitely, I went in, I had no idea what it was, woke up this morning and I just like popped it on right away and I was like, all right, we'll see what it is. Like I all I knew was that Michael Caine was in it from the cover on Roku, and I was like, okay, and that was it. And yeah, this definitely would have been a perfect movie to show in high school for world history. Like you literally said it, you read my mind. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, yeah, dude, this feels like something I would have saw in high school, because there's not a lot of gore, you know. Yep. There's a lot of dudes getting shot with no bullet holes.
And then the move back of classic,
very '60s.
The classic.
Although
slump.
The spear, the blood, and the mm-hmm. the spears, I think was a lot more than you would see at the time. But yeah,
mm-hmm. My favorite was the guy. He was trying to shoot better, so he got on top of a barricade, and then he got shot. And then he did what Ariel said. He went.
Yeah.
He turns back. And then he goes, my leg. And I was like, what? I thought you got shot like in the fucking chest or like in the shoulder. He just like, my leg from like SpongeBob. And I was like, oh. But, yeah, I didn't expect it to be an epic. You know, I thought it was going to be a movie, you know, the size of a tangerine kind of thing. And had to throw it in there. And yeah.
Very, very epic music and very epic opening as well. Yeah. With the Zulu kind of thing, yeah.
Just on fire fucking coming straight at the screen.
Yeah, it like straight up came at me. I was like 8 in the morning and I was like, oh, okay, we're here. Cool. Like, I was like, all right, war movie? Sick. Yeah, I think I dug it. I thought it was pretty cool. I felt it was a very kind of just straightforward film. I mean, like, I know we did the other two. With Peeping Tom and The Uninvited, and I feel like there were a lot more. There was a lot more going on, I guess, like character-wise, like was a lot more deep. While this one was kind of more like, look at the production, look how big and epic it is, kind of thing. Where I honestly love that aspect of like older films where they feel fucking grand, like they feel huge, and they feel like. Like, I'm not going to lie, like, when I saw, like, you know, those old, the same thing, like, 60s epics where, like, Ben-Hur or Ten Commandments and all that stuff, where, like, they just feel fucking huge. Like, I feel like, I even as a kid, I was like, did these actually happen? Because just the production is fucking insane. Mm-hmm. So, like, seeing that, you're almost like, holy shit. But, yeah, this one I dug. I feel like yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to know a little bit more about it, like, because again, I went kind of blind, so I was kind of like, okay, war movie. All right, cool, sounds good. Mm-hmm. I did feel that it was a little slow at the start. Like, I was like, okay, all right, I see where this is going. And then, you know, right after that first hour mark, it like picks up, and then like everything starts kind of coming together, and you're like, ah, okay. But yeah, I enjoyed Michael Caine's character. I really enjoyed the thief character. I'm pretty sure everyone probably loves that guy.
Hook, yeah. Hooky.
Hooky, yeah. I knew it too. I was like, watch, this guy's going to be like the shit. He's going to get like a Medal of Honor, a Purple Heart, whatever. And he did. And I was like, oh, fuck. Okay, cool. Like, I swear that guy, I've seen him somewhere. He has such a recognizable smile. Like, he made a lot of fucking great faces during his battles, his fight scenes. I was like, dude, I've seen this fucking dude, or I think he has like a son or something that's acting, or I don't know, he looks so familiar. It was driving me mad. But yeah, he was really great. At first I was like, man, you're kind of a scumbag. And then over time I was like, damn, okay, this guy like redeemed himself in my eyes. I was like, this guy's dope, I like him, he's really cool. Yeah, Michael Caine, same thing. Like Ariel was saying that like he had that like arrogance, and he was super, like, and you notice his evolution, like, at first, he's very flamboyant, and he's very, like, oh, you know, posh, and he's like, yeah, that's a good lad, kind of thing. There's a gentleman, and I was like, oh, okay. And then over time, like, you see, like, at the end of the movie where he's just like, do you feel like this? Like, do you feel sick and all that? And I was like, damn, like, I feel like everything happens right at the end. Like, everything I think you wanted at first in the beginning, the first hour that you're kind of like, what's going on? Okay, I get it. This finally kind of gets wrapped up nicely at the end. So yeah, I dug it. Yeah. But nice. I kind of want to know a little bit more from your guys' aspect. Cause like I said, I knew barely anything about it.
Yeah. For me, this is, like I said, this is a movie that I was trying to think of for a while, like what movie I wanted to cover for this miniseries. And I had forgotten, like, same thing with, like, Ariel, where I hadn't seen this movie in so many years. And I was like, oh, man, I remember loving Zulu. And I think I hate it when people say, oh, you know, they just don't make movies like they used to. But I gotta give it, like, that's actually true here. Like you guys were both saying, this movie is a fucking epic. Like, it is, the scale of it is just so humongous. Like, there's no way that today you would really get a movie that looked this grand. And sure, like, there's still movies that you spend however many hundreds of millions of dollars on, and they look fantastic, but they're not this visceral and just like where you're not going to get like thousands of extras, and you're not going to burn down your entire set like you would in this one. And it's just the way it's shot too, with like the widescreen and everything. These historical epics that existed, you named a bunch of the great ones, Alan. You know, there's also stuff like Bridge on the River Kwai and all these really great historical epics that have kind of, they were definitely at their height here in the 60s. You got all these, you end up getting your Lawrence of Arabia's and all these just grand epics, these historical films. And then they kind of, over the next couple of decades, dwindled. And you had like Gladiator and Braveheart in the 90s and early 2000s. And then you had your Lord of the Rings, which is a fantasy epic more than a historical epic, but it still had that same, at least, huge feel to it. And then you had a few epics, this kind of last gasp, but they all kind of were these famous failures that, because they're so expensive, they ended up losing a lot of money. You had Troy, you had Master and Commander, and you had Alexander. And that's not to say necessarily that those films aren't of a particular quality or anything, but they kind of just didn't make money. And we really haven't seen an epic since. I am curious to see when Ridley Scott comes out with his Napoleon, if it is going to be a grand scale epic like this. But it was so cool to just get taken back to this time when movies were like this. They were just like, you would see them in the widescreen, and widescreen was something you could only get at the theater. There were no widescreen TVs. It was this new kind of thing, and just getting to see just like 1,000 fucking dudes up there, just all these people dying and just explosions and shooting people. And the effects might not have been like necessarily the greatest, like we're talking about. They didn't even have squibs or anything. But just seeing the grand scale of it is truly something to behold, and almost entirely shot on location. This was shot in South Africa, with the exception of a couple scenes that were done in the interior of the church. It was all done on location. They actually had all of the extras were of the Zulu tribe. That I thought was really cool, because that was something I was a little worried going back to about this. I was like, this is a movie from the 60s about a bunch of like British dudes against a bunch of Zulu people. And I'm like, how is it going to look? But I think actually it fares pretty well. I think that this movie comes, when it comes down to it, is very anti-imperialistic. It is at the end kind of saying like, the British, like you mentioned, Ariel, this is a war they should not have been involved. This is something they should not have done. They do not come out looking good in this movie. The Zulus, I think, because this movie kind of sparked my interest in, years and years back, the Zulu culture, and just kind of being very interested in that. I remember, I don't know if you guys remember that show Deadliest Warrior, but they did a Zulu episode, and it was just like, oh man, yeah, go Zulu, you know.
Yeah, dude, I love that show.
They right? even put a British helmet on the mannequin that they used the Zulu weapon on.
That's so perfect.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it's, you know, the Zulu, they are treated with such respect to the point where the Zulu chief in this movie, or the Zulu king in this movie, is actually the kind of current chief of the Zulu people, because, and he's actually also the grandson of the guy he's playing, the great grandson of the guy he's playing. So I thought that was like a little cool thing. So they really did have a lot of respect for the culture. And when they come, it's not just like 300 or something where it's like these evil invading armies. They are treated really respectful. And at the end, the British are kind of like looking around, and they see, like you mentioned, with Michael Caine kind of reflecting, like, I feel sick. You have the guy doing the roll call, and he's just going down the list, and just so many people are dead. And it's like, what was the point of any of this, of defending this random crag of land that we stole from the Zulu people? And it's just like, yeah, just all this death and destruction feels so pointless. And for being such a huge war epic, it's so anti-war and anti-imperialism. And that really, it was something that resonated with me when I first saw this when I was a teenager, but so much more now, being quote-unquote grown up and having seen so many more things in the world. And the fact that they were able to make this much of an anti kind of British anti-imperialist movie in the 60s, I thought was pretty forward thinking.
Yeah, it definitely gives out feels of like a ladder movie to this movie of like Full Metal Jacket in a way, like where that movie ends very much so with the main character having that still that sense of feeling of like, what's even the point of this? There's no point to this horror that calling back to another good movie as well with the I was about to say Heart of Darkness, Apocalypse Now. But yeah, like it just gets that feel of like the majority of war, you know, being pointless, and it was definitely a very high concept for this movie to make. Like it's definitely something that's a lot more easier to, I don't want to say talk about, but come to mind in a writer's mindset of like war. You know, the negativity of war being some pretty much like outweighed mainly for the majority of the time to the positive of war. And yeah, so definitely it's just like with this, especially coming out in the 60s, was probably a call to also and a commentary also to probably like the war that was going on in the 60s. In a way, which Michael Caine, like, I think if I remember correct, like he was very much like he still is like kind of like an advocate to that kind of thing. He's very much a hippie. Yeah. And
well, people know that.
Yeah. And so it definitely, I wouldn't be surprised if that was also their inspiration as well with telling this movie, of making that impression on the audience at the time as well, of like the not fragility, the like you know, the fertility, the how fertile war could be, you know.
I think the biggest thing that kind of like was surprising is because, you know, it is of its time and people of that time very racist. And I was like shocked that, like, I was kind of like, the majority of the film I was like, I really don't want the British to win. Like, I was like,
yeah,
like I kind of was a little like worried. I was like, is this gonna be like pro like kind of British thing, because it felt very Alamo-ish as well. I was like, wait, yeah, I hope they don't win, kind of thing. And then because I was like, that looks really bad. But I'm glad that, like, even that kind of sense was pretty ahead of its time, that, like, you know, they showed that they're like, yeah, dude, they did the best they could. They technically lost. I mean, there's no way of winning at all. And I appreciate that, like, that they showed the compassion of the Zulu warriors, like, to be like, yeah, dude, like, we have this in the bag. Like, there's no fucking way you're going to win. But at least they were still like, we can come and fucking kill you, or we can just have enough compassion to be like, go home, like, just fuck off, you know. And especially at that time, sometimes they villainize people of like different countries or nations, and especially in films of that time, where I'm just like, yeah, that's not gonna roll well nowadays, you know, obviously, because back then people were very backwards thinking. But yeah, I was very shocked about that. I was like, that's awesome, like, I'm glad it came to that conclusion. And I'm like Ariel was saying, it's very anti-war, and you know, I mean, what, just 20 years before, it was the biggest fucking world war, you know, on the planet. So I'm pretty sure it resonated with many veterans that probably went through the same thing, where they're like, what the fuck was the point of this? Like, why am I here? I mean, I can't say, you know, I've never been in war or anything like that, so I'm really glad.
I would say the only war that actually mattered might have been World War II, but
like, it just sucks that it happened, you know. I'm glad that things worked out to an end, I guess. But yeah, like, it just sucks that we have to get to that as humans, that we go through the same fucking thing over and over and over again, and it's like, war is never great. Like, it's never, people die, it's horrible, destruction, we just, please, no, like, stop.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, really interesting that the way the movie ends with that little last voiceover by Richard Madden. No, it's Richard Burton.
Oh, there we go. Sorry.
Yeah, Richard Burton, you know, he's got that iconic voice, and he's telling, like, oh, this is, like, they were so decorated of the, like, 11,000 or whatever Victorian crosses that were ever given out. 11 of them went to these guys, like, a tenth of them. But, and it's showing them, and it's like, oh, this huge military honor. But the, and it's, like, going through the list, it's saying this guy, this guy, this guy. And they're all fucking miserable. They're all, like, standing around, like, patching up their dead comrades or, like holding a wound or just, like, looking out in the distance, looking depressed. And it's just like, yeah, you've got all these honors and this is this event, which is, like, kind of, you know, I think at the time was, like, this celebrated thing. But it's like, oh, yeah, it was this huge victory, quote unquote, even though the movie makes clear that it wasn't. And it's like, yeah, it is a very these very hollow thing. And it reminded me of, like, all the, you know, the Vietnam veterans, like Ariel talking about, who, you know, got rid of their Purple Hearts. And it really hit me emotionally. And all of the anti-war stuff in this movie, just that runs through it. And I think I would love to see more stuff that shows war so on such a scale that also condemns it so well.
Yeah, I think we're going to, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years we'll see more of that kind of narrative. I think there's some instances of that kind of narrative. Like, I don't know if All the King's Men has some kind of, but there's some kind of instances. I just can't think of them right now, but more directly told, like this one was, Full Metal Jacket is, of that kind of commentary. Now that specifically the Afghani Middle Eastern wars kind of come to end, hopefully. I think that there's a lot of autobiographicals that are books that are out that kind of like have this kind of narrative, but definitely, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years, like, we'll get more movies kind of like of that. Hopefully.
I really hope that we can return to the epic genre and get more films that are just shot on this grand scale like this. And with, you know, CG and everything. And, like, I don't know that that will happen. But like I said, there's a chance, like, Napoleon's Ridley Scott could be like that. You get some of maybe more of these, like, kind of old school, quote unquote, film directors who want to do that. So you never know. But hopefully we get to see some more epics in the next couple of years. Because they've been gone. They've been really gone.
What would you consider, like, the ones that, like, in recent history that are just, like, coming to mind? Or, like Gladiator. Would you consider Gladiator, like,
I would. I think that was really the last of it, right? Like, because I was talking about before, Gladiator. That came out in 2000. You know, I think that was the last. That and maybe, like, Lord of the Rings were the last really big successful epics. And then, you know, literally a year or two after that, you had the string of ones that more or less killed the genre.
Yeah, because I know, like, recently, like, yeah, another one that kind of, like, had failed was, like, The Heart of the Sea. It was the one about, like, the true story of the Moby Dick.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth's in that, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's kind of, like, I know that there's, like, been some that, like, kind of, like, come in. Like, I think another one with Robert Pattinson was, like, The City of Z was kind of trying to kind of, like, that a journey kind of movie, you know, like, like an epic story, not like an epic grand scale, but just the epic story as who originated the epic in the Greek.
I will say, I think one of the things now that, let me ask this first. What do you, and I guess to define an epic, do you guys think of it as it has to be like a war epic or like a grand scale where like a lot of construction, like, you know, like those old like Greek kind of epics or Roman epics where they have like they almost completely make a fucking Colosseum or they just make like half of it and it's fucking out there somewhere in the desert bumfuck wherever, like, do you consider that, or like Lord of the Rings were because Lord of the Rings was predominantly like, you know, yeah, you see like New Zealand and everything, but
yeah,
the fight stuff, isn't that like kind of more like they make practical kind of a, oh my god, what are they called? It's like
bigatures.
miniatures. Yeah, they're like miniatures, and you know, they CGI stuff here and there. Do you consider that?
Sorry, Ariel.
Because I was going to say, we kind of do have, because I think you might like this, Ariel, and I wonder if you'll agree with me.
I think I know what you're going with.
Comic book films where they're pretty epic in that sense where, you know, Avengers Endgame was, I was like, I know listeners might be like, shut the fuck up, you know what we're talking about. But I thought, like, that was huge. Like, that was grand. Like, that was 10 years of films in the making, and that was fucking grand scale. You got to see all these superheroes and all these characters, and it was a fucking war. But would you consider that an epic? I guess, how do you define it? But yeah, go ahead, Ariel. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Another one that I was like kind of thinking, if we're thinking like on the lines of like Lord of the Rings, is I think what Derek was kind of thinking of, like, locational kind of thing. But one that might possibly like kind of have come close in recent history is like what I would kind of consider as like an epic in a way is like Dune. That's the one that I was thinking of. Potentially the next.
I agree with that.
And especially like I think like the more I think about it, like Dune definitely and that's Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve.
Dennis V for Vendetta, whatever his name is.
You know, the Mexican man. like those were like gigantic, like they shot in location in like Ireland and in the desert and stuff like that. And the shots themselves, I mean, it doesn't hurt with Hans Zimmer's music, but the shots
that'll give you an epic feel
of that epicness. Yeah. Like, yes, the sand, you know, the sandworm is CGI, but even the depiction of that is like an epic, that shot. Like, I think that for me is like an epic when you get those like beautiful, like shot long, like we said with this movie, like, you know, widescreen, like it's just like a picturesque, like you want to put it on your wall kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like in recent history, I think like Dune has that kind of like those shots and stuff like that. And
I think that honestly, I hadn't thought of Dune. And to kind of answer your question, I think it is more of the second thing, where it is you have these huge practically sets and miniatures, and just you have just 1,000 extras and just huge productions and shot in, like, I guess today would probably be like IMAX would be the equivalent of it, you know, like a Nolan thing or something. I actually was thinking a lot about Endgame and whether or not that would qualify as an epic. I don't think so. Because I think it's only the end of that movie that is kind of that. It's most of the movie is kind of just a team time heist and stuff. And a lot of that stuff, it's not, is a lot of CG and you know, there's a lot of the characters are there's not a lot of extras and stuff like that. I'd say maybe even more Infinity War. The end of that feels more epic than like the final battle at the end of Infinity War feels like it's more from an epic than Endgame. I would say. Dune definitely, I think, would maybe qualify. Although I think I don't know how to answer, like, if I would consider something has to be kind of a historical bent to feel epic, or at least feel like that, because I think that is important. Like, I don't think it's necessarily it's defining, but I think it has to have at least that feel. And I think maybe Dune does. Lord of the Rings, while it is fantasy, it has a very historical type feel. It has to feel like this is a great story from history that we're telling you. I think that is important, and that's a little more nebulous to define. So
we'll
I don't
say
know.
that the thing that Dune edges out with Lord of the Rings is like Dune actually makes me want to like know the history, at least personally. Like
I'm probably the other way around, because I'm like, ooh,
like for me, like with Lord of the Rings, like is as a you get the sense of like the current kind of feel of things, whereas like Dune for me, it's like there's so much that has happened, like all this history, political history, which like really awesome of a movie to like make me interested in like political history, but yeah, like I don't know, I think just Dune just like hit me in the right way, because like I just really love that movie.
I do think, yeah, going off that, I think both, I would say this about both Dune and Lord of the Rings, is they have this feeling of this lived-in world with such an epic history,
yeah.
You know, and with Dune, you feel like, okay, this has been so many thousands of years, and there's all these clans, they have all this history, and there's all this backstory, and I think Lord of the Rings is the same, where it's like, there's all these kingdoms, and they've been fighting Mordor for so long, and these elves, this Galadriel's been, like, living for so long, and that's why, one of the reasons they just premiered yesterday, when we're recording the new Lord of the Rings show, and I've been like really into that because it's like, wow, this is this history that we've been hearing about because Tolkien wrote so much. Both Tolkien and of course Frank Herbert wrote all of this lore, and I absolutely love the lore stuff, and that's definitely present in Marvel, the MCU stuff, but it feels more like they are kind of, while they're adapting comics and stuff like that, it's not like, okay, here's the exact story. We're not like doing a one for one.
But also with Marvel, like, we've essentially, like, gotten the beginning of the history, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas,
it doesn't feel it's like the regular world, and it doesn't feel like it has this lived-in, like, lore and culture and history in the way that these films do. Yeah,
it's like, we've seen the history. That's essentially, like, we've lived the history in real time. Mm-hmm. Whereas it might be different if somebody, like, came and watched Infinity War, for example. Mm-hmm. As their first Marvel movie, and then to have all this history that came before it, kind of thing. Whereas,
like, I will say, though, like, Black Panther does a good job of having that, like, history to this kind of, like, this thing, and I think that does carry over into Infinity War. So I will say that part of it definitely has that same feel of a Lord of the Rings or a Dune. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, though, too, we're kind of in this new, I mean, filmmaking's always going to change, it's always going to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, yeah, we might not have like these, you know, maybe we don't have the resources or the capacity to have thousands of extras, which I love that shit. But at the same time, though, I mean, with like computers evolving and we have all these absolutely amazing visual effects artists building these huge worlds like Dune, I feel like It's the epic has changed a little in a sense, because back then, you know, when this film came out, it was a big production and you know, it was trying to be huge. Like, it was all about the spectacle and being as grand as and big as it can be. While, like, you know, there's plenty of other films at the time that weren't, you know, the vast majority wasn't that. Nowadays, the vast majority are blockbusters, like huge fucking films, like how Ariel mentioned that there's like scenes shot in IMAX and they're fucking grand and big. And it kind of reminded me of like the shot in the 2013 Godzilla, where, yeah, it's not an epic by any stretch of the imagination, but there's some shots where I just go, holy shit, you feel that grandness. It's the first time they finally show Godzilla at the Hawaiian airport, and they did this really great. It's one of my favorite shots because it gives that grandiose kind of feeling of a god walking on Earth, where, like, you know, that they're showing the Muto and everyone's screaming at the Muto, but when Godzilla shows up, it gets quiet and everybody sees him in awe, and then he does his iconic skronk fucking thing.
Skronk.
Skronk. But yeah, so I feel like nowadays it's a lot easier in an aspect to make epics, in a sense, but I don't think I want to consider them like these old ones, but at the same time, I feel like it's a natural evolution, because I'm pretty sure if you show people from that time, you know, let's say, you know, some people, you know, didn't live long enough to get to the age where we are now with films, or even some of the actors, you'd show them some of these fucking huge films. Like, even, I would even go as far as saying, like, Mad Max Fury Road is almost like it's huge, it's lived in. And like, that film, albeit, you know, it was filmed on location, there was a lot of CGI for a lot of, like, mountain stuff and terrain, and I was fooled. I legit thought that's how some of the parts of the world looked. Obviously not the big fucking mountain with the water spouting out, yeah, that's CG, but even that felt like a lived in world. So I guess
that would be an epic. Yeah, honestly, you know, maybe it's just the historical epics that have kind of disappeared, and they're there. Yeah, like, because that, I mean, but it's also George Miller. Like, he's like a fucking mad genius, and he can make shit like that. So he is, yeah, probably still the exception.
True.
Yeah, I think there's like, I think the, for me, and I've thought about this a bit but just the overall genre of historical fiction, or even like, you know, historical nonfiction, has kind of been in a lull in recent history, because I think we had an oversaturation of it about like maybe not even a decade ago, like, or I feel like that at like 10 years ago, I think we had like kind of like an oversaturation of like not even epics, but just historical stories, you know? And I feel like now it's kind of like becoming a lull, like even, you know, with biopics and stuff like that, it just feels like there's like a saturation in the, you know, cinema market right now for these biopics, and at least in my opinion. I think that that's why it kind of is contributing to like why they're not doing so well in the box office. I know that well, Elvis did okay, yeah, but I mean, I know that they probably were expecting more, especially from Baz Luhrmann movie.
Well, yeah, Elvis was interesting because it had a weak opening, but it did really well. Like, it had really, really good legs. So that's kind of like when we had Phil Iskov on a couple weeks ago, like, we talked about how you can't tell the whole story of a movie's success just from its opening weekend. And I think Elvis really helped prove that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that that might contribute to why historical epics aren't happening as much nowadays, just because, like, besides the, like you said, like, with that run of movies, like, they came out back to back to back, almost. So it kind of, like, feels like, I know that, you know, movies and cinema, like, they go through ebbs and flows and stuff like that, and, I think historical movies in particular always have an ebb and flow in cinema history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. I feel like, yeah, maybe it's just the historical epic might just be kind of dormant for right now. I feel like Ariel said, it comes and goes, you know, and also too, cinema's always had its like oversaturation of a lot of things. Like, yeah. You know, the historical epic, and then there was like westerns up the ass, and then over time, now, you know, in the past 30 years, you know, now it's comic book films, and there were zombie films and zombie shows and everything everywhere. Like, just some, that's like the double-edged sword of like Hollywood, is that what once there's something that catches the attention of the masses that everybody loves, it kind of gets oversaturated. So, like, you know, as much as I love the comic book films, you know, they are everywhere. That's the world we live in now, where it's that. And then I know, like, in the 2000s, it was fucking zombies everywhere until like Walking Dead and everything, and it was just like, okay, I'm over, I got over that shit. And then, you know, there's always something, but what the beautiful part about it is that there's going to be something new that's going to come down the line, where, you know, I hope comic book films don't like absolutely die. You know, I know there's going to be a time where they're going to slow down, but there's going to be that new thing that comes later on where, you know, that's going to break the mold and change everything.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I would say, though, that, like, with historical stories itself, they found, I think, a little bit more newer home in television, specifically, like,
miniseries. That's true. That's very true. There are a lot of those kind of epic, quote-unquote, miniseries, these like long stretches, like, all right, we're going to tell the whole story of this historical event and dive into all the lives of the real people. So, like, you know, we talked about how Troy was one of the last big epics on film, and then just however many years ago we had like the Troy miniseries. So yeah
specifically, people nowadays are into, myself included, but not into like the documentary true crimes, but like the true crime like miniseries, I love them. So, like, yeah.
Yep. Absolutely, I agree. I love the fuck out of those things. They're great. I mean, I feel like that's kind of its own thing now. I feel like now true crime docuseries are like are thriving on, like, you know, streaming services and stuff.
Yeah,
or to, like, the point, you know, where they get parodied with like American is American Graffiti,
American Vandal. I fucking American love Vandal. American Vandal. God damn it, that's a great show. But yeah, like you were saying, like it's I think it's one of the ones that kicked it off. It's going to be one we're going to be talking about on Gateway episodes is Band of Brothers, you know, and then you had the Pacific and you have all these kind of like, yeah, big historical, yeah, epic miniseries.
Yeah, that we'll talk about it more in that episode, but that has like a history to it, mm-hmm. and just the production wise of how that came to be, which is like a really interesting thing.
All right, guys. Well, unless you have any more thoughts on Epics or Zulu, I have a question, because we are ending the vintage collection here. What is, if you have one or two, what is your favorite old movie, your favorite pre-1970s movie?
I have a lot to answer, just like kind of like category wise, like my favorite Gene Kelly movies or Judy Garland movies. Like I love Summer Stock. I love Singing in the Rain, Fred Astaire. We have like a Easter Parade, Holiday Inn. Then you go to Bing Crosby with White Christmas or something like that. Then like I have like a lot of old movies that I love. A family one that's very close to our hearts is like the Scarlet Pumpernickel.
I mean, I said like one or two. You already gave me like eight. I think you're good. I think you got a lot of good suggestions.
Well, because I'm not even hitting my like top ones. I'm trying to think of them.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not as well versed into like those older films like Ariel is.
Ariel's the expert on that for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure her expertise. For me, I haven't seen a lot. Unfortunately, I know it's kind of really bad of me as a film podcaster and film enthusiast, but I liked, I guess, more contemporary, more like, you know, 70s and on, mm-hmm. into now. But I mean, I'm gonna have to cheese it, and I really, really like Wizard of Oz. I think it's a fucking stunning film. Like, if I ever watch it, I'm always blown away at how fucking great it is. And I and the film itself, the production and everything, has its own lore, mm-hmm. in general, all these like secrets and everything. If you have Shudder, go on, go watch Cursed Films. They have an episode about Wizard of Oz that's fucking fascinating and amazing about it. But yeah, I just, you know, if anything, I'm shocked when someone hasn't seen that one, at least that one. That one's just, it's fucking just incredible. Like, it's just, it blows my mind everything they did for that film of the time. Like, it's just, it's an epic in its own right.
I think for me, you know, I'm like I said, I'm in the same boat as Alan, where I am really trying to get into a lot of more old stuff, a lot of older films, and I've been trying to do that the last couple of years, watching a lot of the greats, and now with this, trying to watch some of the ones that are a little less well known. But I've mentioned before my love for Brief Encounter. It's absolutely in my top 10 movies of all time. But then really anything by Billy Wilder, I think he is an absolute genius. Like, one of probably the, maybe if not in the top two, like maybe the best screenwriter of all time, and also really, really great director. So I'd say maybe The Apartment, if I had to choose one of his. Although I'll probably also throw in Sunset Boulevard and Double Indemnity too. But yeah.
Ariel, so which one is the one, like right now the question, right when you get asked that question, which one just pops in your head right away? Like, what's the very first one that you're like, yes, that one?
Well, one that I want to watch like right now is Summer Stock. Like, I just,
Summer Stock?
Yeah, I just love that movie. I mean, Judy Garland, Gene Kelly, just such an amazing movie. Like, my goal in life is to reenact the final, like, well, it's not the final one. It's the one that opens up the show of the show that they put on at the end, of Judy Garland in that black suit with the short, but she's wearing shorts and like with the pink background, just like such an iconic shot.
I actually never seen that, so maybe we have to do that for you've never seen.
Yeah, we would have to do that, because like I've never, you know, I know who Judy Garland is.
It is actually a very modern movie, like in the sense of like it takes place in like Americana at that time of like 60s, I think. Mm-hmm. Early 60s, not yeah. Very funny movie. Love it. Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And speaking one last question. And speaking of like war epics, I actually have not really seen a lot of war films, to be honest. Like, I feel like this is one of the fucking maybe like a handful I've seen. But what are your guys' like? Because Ariel dropped a lot of like big ones. Like, I've never seen Full Metal Jacket or Apocalypse Now. So, like, what are your guys' go to?
I like Apocalypse Now because I really like the history of like Heart of Darkness. I love the, like, it's just Apocalypse Now is such an insane movie that was made. I mean, just messing up my Martin Sheen, unfortunately, that whole thing, but just that whole, the whole background of that. And like, I love, we read Heart of Darkness in school and then watched Apocalypse Now. And like it's just like such an iconic movie, you know. That's the one, like, I love the smell of napalm in the morning and all that. Oh, war movie. Goodness, like, it's always like, oh, put me on the spot, because I do really love a war movie, especially World War II. Like, we'll talk about it like in the episode, but like Band of Brothers is like one of my favorite television series of all time. And
pretty good.
Yeah. But yeah, like, damn, I can't think of any war movie right now.
What about you, Derek?
I mean, Lawrence of Arabia is obviously like fucking iconic. Bridge on the River Kwai. Those are both kind of these older epics. I haven't rewatched it in a while, so I don't know how it hold up, but Glory, I like
Glory's a lot. Good one.
Mm-hmm. Glory's really good.
Sad.
Yeah, it's a very sad movie. I actually kind of gravitate more towards like World War One films a lot more than World War Two. I think it's really kind of interesting. Saving Private Ryan, World War Two, Saving Private Ryan is iconic. Another Spielberg that I think is, people don't love it, but I really do, is War Horse. I think that's a really just kind of beautiful, sad film that you wouldn't see really that often, a story like that. Probably those ones off the top of my head, those ones.
You know what? I actually lied. I have seen about 9 war movies, and it's like my favorite. So I don't even know how. You guys probably haven't heard of them, but they take place in, it's Wars in the Stars. But yeah, you know, I can't remember them right now, but.
Mm.
Yeah, they're not about World War II, but they're definitely, you know, these little, small little science fiction-y war films, you know. I don't know. I don't know how they're doing. Maybe they'll be popular one day, but yeah. We'll see.
I think they you know, they're just making TV shows out of them now. They're not too popular.
Yeah, but they're no biggie, but yeah.
Oh, fucking Dunkirk. I forgot about Dunkirk.
Dunkirk is good. Dunkirk, too. Oh, my gosh. I'm on a Karen... Cillian Murphy kick, his character in that, man, always destroys me.
He's in it.
Oh yeah,
Dunkirk. Yeah.
Oh, shit,
you gotta watch Dunkirk, man.
He's
it's
in
great.
Every like every Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah,
almost, which is like makes me so happy that he's finally getting his leading role.
Fuck
in
yeah.
Oppenheimer. I'm so excited for that movie. Like, yeah,
I honestly just want to see it because of him. Like, I know about like the whole Oppenheimer stuff.
Yeah,
you know, it's.
I just finished. Yeah, I just finished Peaky Blinders, and fuck, that ending.
I need to go back and watch it.
Yeah. Love it.
There is right now, there is a bunch of film fans who are fucking shouting, come and see it us right now, but...
I've heard good things about it, yeah.
That's just the most film bro-y war movie I could think of, and I'm just, everyone's just yelling, like, come and see, it's a masterpiece!
Come and see?
Yeah, it's a new, it's like a pretty new movie.
No, it's from like, it's 85. Well, Coming I guess it's new deep? Compared to, yeah.
Really? I thought it was like recent.
No, it's from 85. It's, I think it's from the Soviet Union. Somebody's going to be really mad at me for not knowing, but yeah, it's one of those movies where, yeah, it's one of those movies where like the director just like basically literally tortured his actors and stuff like that. But yeah, thank you guys for talking about this, all these old movies and introducing me all this stuff and letting me introduce at least you, Alan, and reintroduce you, Ariel, and myself a little bit to Zulu and kind of delve into this different side of the movies that we never really get to talk about on the show. I had a really, really good time with it. But yeah, we have a whole back catalog of other episodes if you guys have liked this, got that. We have a few other shows. Ariel has her show, as we mentioned, You've Never Seen, where she introduces someone to a movie that we really should have seen by this point, whether it's a pop culture classic or just kind of a, you know, an iconic, one of the best movies of all time. I also have my Gateway episode show, which will be coming back soon, where we cover TV, looking through the lens of a single episode. And then I have Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones on the MCU, as well as I do a co-host a podcast with my friend Damien called Can I Say Something, where we kind of just talk about more recent film stuff and happenings. Definitely check us out if you guys liked us. We've got all our social medias. Just look up Undercast Company. We've got our Discord. We have really great discussions there. And if you want, you can sign up for our Patreon for as little as $1 a month. That get access to episodes early sometimes. You get access to bonus episodes. And once we hit a certain goal with that, that's when I'll start going ahead and releasing season 2 of Gateway episodes. We're actually very close. So we just need a couple more people to sign up for the Patreon at as little as $1 a month. And that really helps the show so much. If you guys can do that, it really makes the biggest difference. But also just listening, it means a lot. Coming from the heart, like thank you. If you guys are hearing this right now, I really appreciate each and every one of you. I just wanted to say that.
Same here. I really appreciate it. And I love that we're getting a little bit of like conversations going on in the Discord. It's a lot of fun. You know, sometimes I try and chime in. I don't get a chance because I'm at work. But I love hearing everybody talking about it. Again, you know, big shout out to Derek's buddy Damien, because he helped me pick one of my movies for this miniseries. So please throw stuff out there. Please talk with us. You know, we'd love to hear whatever you guys have to say. And just even in general, just, you know, what movies have you guys seen? And like, I kind of like how, like, Derek and Ariel, I think sometimes you guys ask questions. I kind of want to throw out questions, too, just for fun, just to spark conversation. So if you guys like that, doing that on the Discord or, like, Twitter or anything, just let us know. We'd love to hear from you guys, and I am 1,000% appreciative of you guys listening to us, because I feel like we love what we do, and we love talking about our film, and I don't think we'll ever get tired of it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for all your patronage and your support and like your feedback too as well. I just thought of one more film that covers both war and old movie of the best years of our lives.
That's been on my list for so long. I need to watch that.
It's a really good one.
Yeah, I know it's a Stone Cold classic, and I need to watch it. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for being amazing, everybody.
Take it easy, everybody.
Christmas in Connecticut also.